I love her. I love her very much. I've never had a feeling like
shut
this.
Up.
And speaking of love, weren't you and I going to talk about that today?
Yes, we were.
But, well, couldn't you manage to arrange your time so you could have a little fun, too?
Okay.
Go, best friend.
Is Little Italy, Toronto safe? Not from gabagoos.
That was one of the things that I love about this movie is that they absolutely shoved in every single possible, like, whatever your favorite Italian slang is, it's in this movie. And there was even some stuff that I was like, I had to start wondering at a certain point, did Italian American / Canadians actually write this movie? Because there was some slang that they were using that was actually Yiddish.
Oh, yeah.
Or is there an overlap that I just don't know about?
Well, we can get into that.
I couldn't really find a lot of cultural context, but, like, I kind of just want to talk about, like, Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen.
Yeah.
Like, what they were doing, basically. Like, which was honestly not much.
Yeah, that's something I want to get into, too. Or, like, just the casting of this whole film, but we'll talk about that.
You know what, actually, I was dying to ask you about, but I was holding off because I wanted... What's the Italian word for headscarf? Whatever it is, it just slipped off my head. Anyways, I was dying to ask you, now that the new Taylor Swift album has come out.
Oh, yeah.
Is it like the only thing that they're playing at Starbucks?
Yes.
I knew it.
It's not the entire album. It's her, like, it's like 80 plus songs of her, like, discography, basically. So it ranges from, yeah, 80 plus. This girl has a lot of million albums. Plus, they, like, peppered in some Christmas songs as well, because it is the Hollandaise.
Hold up. The Hollandaise. Big egg at it again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big egg.
Wait, so...
Not sponsored by Big Egg. I fucked up my eggs this morning. I'm so mad.
Aw.
Yeah.
I watched a video on... I didn't know this, but, like, I was fucking up my scrambled eggs in so many different ways. And I watched this video on YouTube of this guy who's, like, three ways to make it. He makes French-style scrambled eggs, Cantonese-style, and I can't remember the third. But the Cantonese-style is my favorite because it's the most dry. You know what I mean?
Oh, like, yeah, because you like a drier egg.
I like a dry egg.
Wetter, sloppier egg.
Yeah, you like that sloppy egg on toppy of your toast. But the French-style eggs are delicious. It just takes, like, a little bit too long for me.
Yeah, it's cooked very low. They're very also rich because it's just 75% butter.
Oof, yes,
and
yes,
cheese, which is fine, but every day.
Ay, ay, ay.
Ay, ay,
ay. Napoli, what are you going to do? What do you want from me? This, you know what? This is going to be the best episode. I'm so excited to record this one because it's going to be, like, just outrageous amounts of, like, slang, Italian-American slang and, like, accents.
Italian-Canadian-American slang.
Oh, yeah, excuse me. Italian-Canadian.
Yeah.
Which is so funny.
Which is low-key atrocious, I think.
I had so many feelings and thoughts about this movie. Guys, today we're doing Little Italy.
Woo!
Which is a treat and a punishment at the same time.
It really is. Like, this kind of movie is my bread and butter in the sense that it's got hot people in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's got romance in it. And that it's, like, terrible. Like, I don't watch any reality TV shows that are, like, trashy, you know, like any of the Housewives or Bachelors or Bachelorettes or any of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I specifically go for very, like, awful cringe rom-coms like these or any holiday kind of Hallmark movies, even though they're so painful to watch. It's just, like, it makes me feel good.
You pick your poison and it's this.
And, like, when we're watching some of these movies, or, like, when I'm watching kind of any movie sometimes, I get a little distracted, and then I start to multitask. I pick up my phone, and I start to do other things. This one today, I was very avidly watching it. There were small pockets.
Girl, me too. And I can't explain
okay.
it. I think it's because when you are, for example, being tortured, you're in pain, you cannot distract yourself from the pain. The only thing that you feel is the pain of being tortured. And while watching Little Italy 2018 in brackets, that is probably the experience. It felt like they hated us while I was watching. It felt like they said, actually, fuck you. From the very get-go, the the voiceover at the beginning.
Oh, my God.
When they were doing this, Marrone, why? Why did they do this to us? Why did it last like 8 to 10 minutes for starters? And have we heard of Show, Don't Tell? Hello?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was, and as if it wasn't bad enough, they had to make it one of those volley style voiceovers. So they're finishing each other's sentences. And I wanted to, not to be dramatic, but die. I wanted to die.
Yep.
But I couldn't look away. It was a train wreck. And that's really what this show's about. That's really what VomCom is about.
I agree.
This is a true example.
Okay, so that's... I feel like we're going to get so carried away.
Yeah. Wait, what episode is this? What number? 14?
14? Yeah.
So guys, welcome to VomCom episode 14, Little Italy. Wait, how should we say that?
Welcome.
Should we do it?
Because
we
have welcome. To Little Italy, our Little Italy.
You had to clarify.
I like your pizza. Our pizza.
Our pizza. Ding. I have so many things. I'm thinking of so many thoughts right now. So everybody, welcome to VomCom, the podcast about the romantic comedies you love to hate.
And hate to love.
And
our VomCom.
Our pool of vomit after watching this movie mixed together, but it's okay because it's got oregano and figs in it.
The fig
is to cut through the gouda. Anyways, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself because we haven't even started given any backstory and I'm already ripping into the writing.
Before we do that, let's do our land acknowledgments. We don't forget that. We'd like to acknowledge that the recording of this podcast takes place both in the region of Peel, which is part of the treaty lands and territory of the Mississaugas of the Credit,
and Ottawa, which was built on unceded Anishinaabe Algonquin Nation territory. I don't know how I held it together just now. Literally, I was like this. And then as soon as my time came, it was like, that was no change of my face.
You forgot to change your face.
I only got one. What do you want from me?
I got one face, one mouth.
Oh my God. These bambinos always saying, Nona, I want this from you. I want that from you. Well, what do you want from me when I'm in my grave? Huh?
Oh my God.
Do you say then?
When Nicoletta showed up at home and her grandmother sees her dressed in a black dress.
So fucking funny.
And she goes, you're already dressed for my funeral.
The drama. Which, to be fair, that is, life imitates art, y'all, and vice versa.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is actually realistic. I have had that exact, I've seen that interaction, okay? That's not the dramatic part of this movie. That's not the unrealistic part of this movie.
No. Okay, can I read you the synopsis for this movie on IMDb? A young couple must navigate a blossoming romance amidst a war between their families competing pizza restaurants. That's it. To the point.
Okay. Yep.
Tells you very little.
Yep. I mean, we're about to tell you a whole lot, so sit tight, bitches. But
we really are.
In terms of like synopsis, I think it's a good one. It is what it is. It is what it sounds like. This is a, I would add that this is a Hallmark movie. It's not actually, but it feels like a Hallmark movie kind of bundled up with a Hollywood budget and then just set loose on the public. It's very bizarre. It stars Emma Robertson and Hayden Christensen. Oh, yeah. It stars Emma Roberts and Robertson.
You combined their names.
Oh, shit. Yeah. I was getting a little too creative there. Sorry, guys. It stars Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen. Got it. In the, you heard the hesitation there. As soon as it started coming out of my mouth, I was like, is that his name? But it is. and so they're the leads. They're the romantic interests of one another. And also, like, it has Alyssa Milano in it.
Yep.
The woman who plays Zenona is also very famous, and I recognize her, but I can't remember her name.
And Andrea Martin.
Yes.
From My Big Fat Greek Wedding fame.
They just put her in any vaguely white-ish ethnic role in a movie.
Yeah.
They're like, do and the accent that you always do. She's like, oh, you mean this one? They're like, smashed it. That's perfect.
Yeah. And then it also has, so you said Alyssa Milano, Hayden Christensen, Emma Roberts. The Nono Carlo is played by Danny Aiello.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
It sounds familiar, but I don't know from what. That's it. Andrew Fung of Kim's Convenience fame.
Mm-hmm.
Andrea Martin, we said. And then Jane Seymour, who plays Chef Corinne.
Yes. A very odd, like, character to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Almost, you could say, unnecessary.
Yes, I would say that. I would agree. I would say that exact thing. Why? Let's regroup here a little bit, because I don't know where you want to go, and I don't know where I want to go either. What are you thinking right now?
I wanted to talk about, I just wanted to mention that, like, okay, because you were like, is this written by Italian Americans? Kind of, yes.
Okay.
So the writers for the screenplay is Steve Galluccio, who is a Canadian writer.
Was born in Montreal, Quebec. Italy?
No.
Montreal.
I know. Was born in Montreal, Quebec. He is a writer and actor known for Funky Town, Mambo Italiano, which I think is his play, mm-hmm. and Little Italy. And then also Vinay Vermani, who is a Canadian actor, who, mm-hmm. if any Canadians listen, was the guy in Dr. Cabby. Do you remember that show or movie?
No.
This is a show that I cannot believe kind of got made.
Is it racist?
I think it was like trying not to be, but it really was very interesting. Dr. Cabby is a TV show where this, I think, Indian... Oh, let me read it to you. An Indian doctor immigrates to Canada in the hope of starting a new life, but bureaucracy confines him to life as a taxi driver. When he cannot suppress his desire to practice medicine, he begins illegally treating patients from his cab.
That sounds like a horror show.
Yeah.
It's like Dexter.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was a movie.
Like a psychological thriller about a doctor who's like performing bootleg surgery in the back of his cab.
Yeah. The tagline is... pay your doctor by the meter.
What the fuck? Wait a second. Is this a comedy?
Yeah.
Oh.
1,000%.
I wasn't sure if it was like a drama. Like, really? That description could go in so many directions.
No.
Anyway. But I'm honestly surprised that this guy, they didn't end up sending. So the movie's set in Toronto in Little Italy because it's about Italian Canadians. But like... I'm surprised that if it's a writer who's from Montreal, he didn't set it in Montreal. Just an observation.
Yep. I also am surprised. But also, what I am surprised about is that, like, when I first heard of this movie, I'm like, oh, Little Italy, New York. Because it's, like, the most famous Little Italy, I think, in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even though lots of places have Little Italies, but it's just, like, you don't think about Toronto, Little Italy. And then... you hear the accents.
Yeah.
You hear everyone's impressions and you're like, yeah, New York. New York.
Okay. Italian Americans.
Italian Americans.
Very over the top with this accent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you start to see more and more of the streets. And I never really noticed the first time. And then on my second watch, I'm like, yeah, this is very obviously Toronto.
And they literally have a shot of the CN Tower at one point.
Do they? I missed that. The only time that I caught it was when Chef Corinne, like when Nikki is in London in her culinary school, she goes, mm-hmm. you have to go back home.
To Canada.
And I said, Canada?
You did a double take, cartoon style.
I did.
Huh?
So it's like, I'm not saying that Italian Canadians don't have an accent, but it's very much not the New York accent. For an Italian American.
Yeah.
So it's all very odd because you have a Canadian, you have two Canadian writers. It takes mm-hmm. place in Canada. I think no one except for Andrea Martin is Canadian.
Oh, Hayden Christensen's Canadian, actually.
No, he isn't. Really?
Yes, ma'am.
Wait, I think I did know this a while ago and I just keep forgetting that fact.
I remember literally reading it in like a magazine like ages ago when he started coming up for doing Star Wars. I remember reading this, like, it was like a Vanity Fair article or something, and they're like, oh, a homegrown talent for the Canadians out there. And I was like, oh, okay. And that dumb piece of information has stuck in my head for literal years.
Wow. Well,
you know what? I bet you the only reason they made this movie in Canada instead of America, they wrote it as an American story and then set it in Canada because that's where all the film grants are.
Yeah. Honestly, that's the reason. I feel like it was that because I think that judging how this movie ended up being, if this took place in New York, in Little Italy, NY, mm-hmm. people would have lost their shit. But because it's Canadian, they're like, okay.
Yeah.
It kind of just gets forgotten, which is unfortunate.
It's also, New York City, part of the dynamic is that Emma Roberts' character, whose name is Nikki, has moved away to London to attend culinary school. She wanted to get out of Little Italy. She basically wanted to like break free, get away from this like sleepy little life that she's always known and do something different and see the world. To say that you want to leave Toronto and go see the world is believable. To say that you want to leave New York City because it's not metropolitan enough is not believable. So maybe that's where they ran into the... They were like, oh, we don't want to rewrite her motivations. What do we do? Let's just change the entire setting of the movie.
That is actually very fair. I didn't think about that. I was just thinking about like her just Little Italy being its own kind of island.
Microcosm, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I also want to talk about Hayden Christensen and Emma Roberts specifically.
Uh-huh.
Because I think also... Okay, no. First off, the cast in this movie, like, I think the biggest name would be Emma Roberts and like, Andrea Martin and Danny Aiello, who is... I just looked it up, and he was in...
He's been playing grandpa. Yeah, he's been playing the Godfather Part 2 forever. Yeah.
And Moonstruck. Oh, so he worked.
He's the dad in Moonstruck. I love that movie. I want us to do that one day.
Yeah. Oh, Jacob's Ladder.
See, Moonstruck is a great story about Italian Americans. I feel like this movie wanted to be Moonstruck so bad.
I think it was trying to be Moonstruck and different. Yeah, and Mystic Pizza, which is why I think they got Emma Roberts to do it. They're like, this is your Mystic Pizza. Because she even wears the red shirt that Julia Roberts is wearing in Mystic Pizza. You know, when they go on their like little date at the fucking distillery district?
Yeah, that fucking ugly ass shirt. Oh, God. They're riding around on the moped, and I'm like, I made fun of people like you.
I know.
You're like, they're supposed to be all like cute and like having a little montage where like, he's like showing her what she's been missing and what she's been missing while she was away from home and how magical the experience is. And I'm like watching them go around on a moped in a farmer's market. And I'm like, how are you ruining a moped montage right now? This movie takes all of the best tropes and just plunges them forcefully down a toilet. Like, the movie, I was feeling like there was zero chemistry between Hayden Christensen and Emma Roberts. Like, aside from that first bar scene where they played, like, the knockoff Weekend song because they probably couldn't get the rights to the Weekend, so they played, like, the next best thing. And then, so that scene had chemistry. And then after that, I was like, I just don't see it. Like, I just don't. They're very clunky with each other and, like, even when they're dancing, there's the part where they go up on a rooftop. There's candles. There's fairy lights. Cute little seats and plants everywhere. I go, okay, here we go. They can't fuck this up. This is going to be the redeeming scene of the movie. And then the music starts wafting up to them from the street. It's so romantic. They get up. They go to dance. And then they start doing this, like, cha-cha slide.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like, how hard is it to slow dance, you jabronis? Like, literally, why are you doing the dad dance where you go side to side and snap your fingers? They're like, yeah. Oh, I can't even remember the steps. It's one step. Oh, my God. I was so mad. I was like, this. How do you fuck up a rooftop candlelight and twinkle light scene? How do you fuck that up? They managed.
Yes.
Anyways, you were talking about the tier of celebrities that were in this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So, like, I am so surprised at, like, the level of celebrity that's in this movie. Like, freaking Alyssa Milano, Emma Roberts, all that kind of stuff. So that's why when I first heard of it, I'm like, oh, this is going to be, like, it's not going to be the best rom-com of the year, but it's going to be fine. They all agreed to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Very, very surprising. Just, like, I will say that everyone did put their, like, whole butt into this, into their roles. Like, no one is kind of, like, half-assing things. Everyone is, like, big and loud, and they did what they could with what they were given, you know?
They were acting for the stage, girl.
They were acting for the... Yes, yes. And then I also will say, so, I hear what you're saying about the chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
Because I do see it on some level. I thought that they together are good. There's, like, potential there because they make a lot of eye contact. I think it also helps that they are both very attractive looking. But when you say that they are clunky together, I think it's because of the direction that they were given, or, like, the, just, like, the stuff that they were given. Because I think the one scene where they have the most amount of chemistry and it was kind of like, whoa, was when they had their date scene in his apartment and they're making pizza. I think of the entire thing, that was, like, the best thing. When everything else, like, the rooftop had so much potential, and then they start dancing. And I thought they were going to be, like, slow dancing, but then they start doing, like, a very terrible, like, lazy tango. But, like,
not even touching. Together.
Not together, like, each separately doing different parts.
Was the choreography done by the Mormons? Like, what the fuck? I was just, it was like, I wonder if the reason that, okay, I have a theory as to the reason why I found them to be clunky. And I think it was because the entire time they were acting, they were cringing internally at the dialogue. Because there was nothing, not only was it tired and, like, played out, there was a lot of repetition. Yeah. There was a lot of, like, I beat you. No, I let you win. Or, like, you know, the thing of, like, the guy will be like, oh, well, you do this. And the girl will be like, no, I do not. And he'll be like, yes, you do. And that's the whole, like, exchange. And it's like, okay, can we, if it's not, if it's not progressing the plot, why is it in the movie? You know what I mean? Why? Yeah, you already established that they're competitive. Like, let's move on, you know?
Mm-hmm. Banter was not good.
Yeah. And I didn't understand, like, I don't think that they fully fleshed out the characters of, like, I don't think that when they were, you know, doing their table reads or talking about the characters' motivations or whatever, that they had a clear concept, because it was like, okay, Emma Roberts' character, we know that she wants to succeed as a chef. Mm-hmm. We know that she has to go home to where she doesn't really want to be, to get a visa so that she can continue working as a chef in the UK. That's her motivation. She wants to get this visa and then make this menu for her chef boss and then go back and work there.
Yeah.
I think it was an hour and a half into the film, and she had not mentioned the menu that she was supposed to be building, which was the crux for her to get this job with this elite chef. She hadn't mentioned it.
Her visa, barely.
Or your
like she
visa.
Did, she wasn't doing any
it.
Paperwork, nothing.
It's like, I just want you to mention it offhand, you know? Or show something to say, okay, we remember what her motivations are. Because then as soon as she gets back, it's like her entire motivation changes. She gets back and all of a sudden she wants to get with Hayden Christensen's character, it seems like. Because she's kind of carrying a torch for him. But so you never see her work on her menu, even though she keeps exclaiming that she wants to be a chef and she can't wait to get out of there and she's leaving soon, so don't forget it, and this kind of stuff. But then she's not, like, the actions and the words don't match. And I get that that's a human thing, but it doesn't make sense in the world of a movie. You need to show that. And also, like, it's like, is she confident? Is she not? Yeah. Is she competitive? Is she not? Because they kept on saying she's this confident, talented cook who's so competitive. But then I would see times where she had the opportunity to be competitive or be confident, and then she just wouldn't. You would see her do this, like, awkward, like, woo thing where she was like, I'm just the girl next door. I can't compete with this international flight attendant who's got like a Gucci bag and heels. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, well, wait, are you the confident person who like left your hometown to go be a cook and you're confident in your skills? Or are you standing around kind of like awkwardly trying to not kiss Hayden Christensen? You know what I mean? It was just like, it just didn't make sense. Like, it just felt like it wasn't fleshed out. Hayden Christensen's character was pretty, it was like, it was a stock character. It's this, it's the kind of like womanizer with a heart of gold type of thing, right? Mm-hmm. So his motivations were clear and I felt that they were consistent, but it just bugged me.
Yeah, because I agree with everything that you said, especially with the fact that she's coming home for a reason. She mentions her visa like once on the phone to Chef Corinne. Mm-hmm. And then she's supposed to be making this menu, and you, and like a good script, a good writer would have had her come home. And then like, they keep having throwaway lines because she's so skinny. And obviously Italian Americans are like, oh, you're so skinny. Like, eat some food. Manja, you know? And then when he makes a comment about like everything will be organic, and she's like, now you're speaking my language, have you heard of kale, all that kind of stuff. So like, you're setting her up to have changed when she went away.
Yes.
And then she has to think of a menu, and a good writing would have brought her back home and then had her see what her like family cooking is like, and then what she as a personal chef wants to put out into the world, and then combine those, because like, you don't go home for no reason. You literally don't go home for just a guy and a visa, you know?
Yeah, which was the way that like, in the world of this movie, that's the only thing that they give her. That's the only thing. And it just doesn't pan.
No. So I agree. You don't see any of that. You literally see her when it cuts to her on her laptop, like working on the menu, and she's doing like,
oh, it's like graphic design is my passion.
Yeah, that's literally the line I wrote down.
Me too. We share a brain cell.
That's
funny.
That's all.
I actually went this menu. When I saw it, I was like, no.
Yeah.
Why are they doing this to me? Like, it's literally, it was comically bad. It was comically bad. She was like making it in MS Paint. What
the fuck? Yeah, y'all. So like, that's the only time she mentions it. And then like, he hand delivers a heart-shaped pizza to her with kale on it. And like, that didn't make her think about, it's not like she took a bite and went, and then like started typing a menu item. Yeah.
That would have been good. Because that would have meant that everything that happened in the movie was there for a reason, and it cohesively and holistically moved the plot forward. But I would say, I off the top of my head could think of like probably 8 to 10 scenes that did not add anything. Like, because of what you just explained about that one scene where he brings her the pizza, why was it in there?
Yeah.
Cut it. Put something else. Use the screen time for something more valuable. And also, why was Luigi on the ladder with him? Was it supposed to be like comic relief? He was Luigi was up, climbed up with him, just behind him. Yeah, for like moral support.
I was like, oh, Luigi's there supporting the ladder, but it looked like he was on it. Like,
no, he was up, on it. Yeah,
up Leo's butt.
Mm-hmm. Also, the whole speaking part of about which, Leo, the whole part about Luigi, like having that heart to heart with Leo, where he comes out. Or I don't know if Leo's supposed to know that he's gay or not, but it was literally just the most like forced diversity moment that I've ever seen, because it was like, it didn't come up again before, it didn't come up before or after. Just in that one scene, we find out that Luigi is gay and was kicked out of his home by his parents and found community in Little Italy. So, okay, that's a great storyline. It never comes up again. There's no point. Literally, the entire point of that little speech that he gives is to convince Leo to, like, remind Nikki what she's missing and that this community is amazing and that she should stay, right?
Like, see, literally, I didn't even get that. I was just like, what the fuck is the point? Is it...
That's what I'm saying. The link is... It's such... Like, they really should have, like, warmed up and stretched their shoulders before making that reach, because you can get hurt that way. You can get hurt. You know?
Yeah. And speaking of forced diversity...
Are we going to talk about the racism? The super, super huge amount of... the level of casual racism in this movie, I was like, oh, you know what movies were like in the early 2000s? And then I looked it up, and this movie came out in motherfucking 2018. And I did one of those, Ooga, what are you talking about? Surely not 3 years ago. But no. Yeah.
This is the thing. This movie came out
3 years ago.
This is the thing. If you took this movie exactly the way that it is, and put it in 2002, I'd be like, yeah, sold. I'd be like, everything makes fucking sense.
Yeah, because it's corny.
Yeah.
There's like racist. Way too many montages. There's so much casual racism. The level of originality is so low in the storyline, but I feel like in the early 2000s that was more acceptable. Now the standards are a bit higher. Diversify. Give us an interesting rom-com. You can still hit all the markers of a rom-com, but have it like be a slightly different premise. Leap year. There's nothing else out there like leap year. That's interesting. You know, like, I'm trying to think of another one off the top of my head. One that came out. What's one that came out more recently that, like, is super rom-com-y? Love and Monsters? Is that one? The one with Dylan O'Brien?
I haven't even seen that one yet.
It's on Netflix. It came out, like, last year or the year before. And I'm pretty sure it's called Love and Monsters. It's really, it's a rom-com. It's very interesting, but it's, the premise is like bizarro by Peraro. So I was like, I was down.
Yeah.
It doesn't take that much to make things a little bit different, y'all. I don't want to see Romeo and Juliet rehashed in Little Italy with a bunch of, a movie. This is a movie for people whose entire personality is being Italian-American / Italian-Canadian. But even those people are kind of disappointed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, whack.
It's. Yeah, I like who is actually the audience for this? Okay, wait. No, that's a good I want to go back to the forced diversity because
you had a point.
Yeah, as previously mentioned, this was a story by Vinay Vermani and kind of co-written by him and the Italian guy, French Canadian guy. How? Listen, as a brown person myself, bro. How did you let this happen? Why would you let this happen to two people of color, two Indians who are antagonistic towards each other, very much stereotypical.
POC minor character on POC minor character violence.
Yeah.
Absolutely unacceptable.
I hated it. And then at the end, where they just like... When the big declaration of love happens at the airport and Luigi follows them also because they all leave the fucking pizza competition to follow Leo to the airport to catch her. Lord. Luigi goes with. And then one of the security guards is, not security guards, TSA, but like Canadian TSA security.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like people who do the screenings.
Yeah. He was very obviously a gay caricature. And then he makes a comment that is obviously very, like, flamboyant. And then Luigi, they have this, like, realization moment where there are two gays near each other. And I hate that so much when in movies, it's, like, just, they, like, end up being in a relationship just by being the only two gay people in the room.
By default,
by proximity. Stupid. Like, that's it. I hated that.
Do and better.
And then at the end, do better. This is, it's Toronto.
It's 2018, y'all. Again, this is something that if I had seen in a movie in 2002, I would have been like, ugh, but whatever. That's, this is what we get. You know, this is the only choices out there. But this is literally Toronto in 2018. Toronto. Yeah. the most populous city in Canada, except for maybe Vancouver. Okay? Mm. You're telling me that there's two gay people?
Only? Two gay Fuck people off. And then two brown people?
Who hate each other.
Who hate each other, but then are literally at the end of the movie, they're standing next to each other.
Yeah.
Nikki goes and dances with the brown guy, whose name I can't even remember because it's like, what is his name?
They literally, do they say it? No, they say it a few times. They do say it a few times. I can barely remember the main characters' names because they're so not memorable. So sorry, everybody.
So they're the two brown people. Sure. The two brown
people are standing. Do them some justice and look it up.
They're standing beside each other, both dressed to the nines. And then Leo and Nikki both go dance with each of them individually and then turn them around to face each other to be like, look, pair up. When they were literally just standing beside each other, he didn't notice that she was beautiful then. Ugh!
So annoying.
Atrocious.
The trope of hate crime. I hate crime. Well, I hated it. The explanation as to why every single storyline is so lazy is because there's way too fucking many. You're trying to make way too much happen in this movie. You have an hour and a half, and you're half-assing each and every one of them. So what you're turning out is like a little like conveyor belt of little turds. Okay, I want to see like a big one big dump instead. That was this a horrible movie. Metaphor. I want to see like. I hate the trope where, we hate each other, and then on a dime, they decide that they love each other, and then they, like, make out passionately. I've seen it so many times, and I look at it, and I go, for what?
For what? For who? I didn't want this. Me, as a viewer, didn't ask for this.
Yeah. Como se dice? Bullshit.
Yeah. This movie is only an hour and 40 minutes long.
It felt like
Avengers Endgame long. So much shit kept happening. So much like cuts to different scenes. So many scenes with characters that like, I'm like, why was this needed? Montages, like you said, just stuff that wasn't important. And so many new characters, like that guy that Nikki's mom tries to set her up with, who then smells her shoe.
Who has a foot fetish, like front and center. Whoa.
At the beginning?
This is making me think of so many things. One, I just had a realization. Girl.
What?
I think, you know what my theory is right now? I think this movie was written in 2002. And it was it was optioned. And it was sitting on the shelf.
Mm.
And then they just made it.
And then they didn't change. They didn't go back.
And didn't change it.
They didn't do a Taylor Swift kind of like rewrite for the times, you know?
They did an Amy Sherman Palladino where they just used all the books that they'd been saving over the last, all the jokes that they had in their little book that they've been saving up over the last 10 years. Oh my God, that's my theory. It would all make sense. It would make so much sense, dude.
You know what? It kind of makes sense. Like, it makes sense that this would have been written in 2002.
Also, I looked at the names of the characters.
Mm-hmm. What are they?
So, is it Jogi or Yogi?
Yes, I think it's Jogi. Because they were saying Jogi. I heard the J.
Okay, so Jogi and Jesse were the two Indian people. Oh, Indian Jesse. Characters. Yeah.
And, like, they have very thick accents when they are very young people who could easily not have accents. And I'm not saying, like, erasure, but I'm like...
Yeah. But, like, we've seen Kim's Convenience now. We've seen the stories of having first generation and second generation and third generation immigrants represented on screen. And that was set in Toronto, and it was beautiful. So, our standards are up here now. So, everyone else needs to
That's what I'm saying is that I can't believe it got made. I think that's why I'm so, like, we couldn't look away and we're so enamored by it. Because there's lots going on. And it's just the fact that we cannot believe that it exists in its form. We haven't even talked about how they did Christian Haydenson.
The hair and wardrobe department in this movie did Hayden Christensen and Emma Roberts both so dirty. Because I know you saw her hair extensions.
I was wondering. I saw it and I'm like, that can't all be her hair.
It wasn't she's all that level bad hair extensions, but it was pretty bad. And both of them had terrible dye jobs. Like, I could see like three different colors in there. What was going on, y'all?
I need an
explication.
One thing, I like Emma Roberts more as a brunette than as a blonde. Personally, I think Hayden Christensen could have looked fine as a brunette, but they just went too dark with it, that it looked like a black void and there was no like texture or highlights. Because some Italians are blonde, okay.
And Emma Roberts, who has, I'm pretty sure her hair is naturally like a middle tone. Yeah. They could have gone even darker with her. And it would have still looked natural. But with him, they gave him this black void hair, like you said. This just like infinite chasm hair. And a fake tan that was quite noticeable, I have to say. Ugh, God.
Yeah, just, like, don't make him Southern Italian.
Yeah. Maybe make like Google images of what do Italian people look like.
What do Italian people look like? And then, like, you're in Little Italy. We see you on College Street. We saw the sign.
Mm-hmm.
Just go around to the little places and listen to the accents.
Yeah.
Come on, guys. Yeah. You're actors.
You can do it. Homework. You can do it. You know, I know you've got a team. You guys have location scouts. You've got wardrobe and makeup. You guys can do it. I believe in you.
Yeah.
You know what we should do after this? We should rewrite this movie. We should rewrite.
I would love to. I think I was going to say the reason why I also watch all of these trash ass things is to take notes and be like, no, I'm not doing that.
Recon.
Learning
about all the traps so you cannot fall in them.
Yeah, truly. There's so many things to talk about. I don't even want to go through the entire movie because, like, there's a lot. Guys, honestly, it's not going to take that much out of your day to watch this movie. Everyone needs to see it to just marvel at, like, a car crash. You know when you, like, slow down on the highway to look at a car crash? And then that's even what causes just the traffic on the other side?
Yes. So be part of the problem and slow down and look at this car crash.
Yeah, just take a look and just be like, wow, that's crazy.
Mm-hmm. Even though we just described it as being an hour and 40 minute movie that feels like 3 hours, go watch it.
So we talked about the accents. That's one of the major things that I wanted to talk about. Their chemistry we made note of. I don't even want to get into all of the things that are kind of like little plot holes or things that just don't make sense and that are just very like movie-like. Like when she gets to the bar and she sees him for the first time and then he just pulls out a soccer ball and then they go have a kickoff outside in the rain and the entire bar follows
everybody
them.
The entire bar leaves the bar and just goes and watches two random people have a shootout. Like, yeah, literally like 1v1 soccer match in the rain at night.
Yeah. Yeah.
While drinking.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I was like, okay. And just like the side characters of her friends and how
you can do it.
Cartoonish. Just switch the word. How cartoonish they are. Just so many things. What are some things specifically that you want to talk about that we haven't talked about yet?
I would love to talk about how horny this movie is.
Oh, yeah. Gross.
Every other line is like a thinly veiled innuendo. Some of them are funny. Mm-hmm. Some of them are funny. Mm-hmm. Some of them are like hurt me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even know where to start.
I know.
There's like, I think that this movie was trying to be edgy by doing all of these like jokes about like the porn style pizza delivery service that they ostensibly offer.
That was one of the things that I laughed at actually out loud today, was when he shows up to the senior citizen home.
Classic.
And like you have the preface of Leo being like, Jogi, like, watch out, these ladies are wild, and you think that they're going to be hot young ladies who get pizza delivered and don't have any form of payment except their vaginas.
Their vagina. The vagina.
And then it opens up and it's as older women and they pull Jogi in and then it cuts to the sign that says so-and-so home for active seniors. That's something I laughed at out loud today.
Yes.
Everything else, not really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I laughed at. There's one part where, like, I don't know why. Why did they subject us to this? There's one part where the Nona from one family, Nikki's Nona, and Leo's Nono, we find out that Franca and Carlo. Okay. So we find out that Carlo and Franca are in love secretly. They've been in love. They've been in a relationship. They've been sneaking around and using the confessional at church to have their little conversations, which is very funny. And then there's one scene where they get together. I think they get together and they get a hotel room. And we have to see them just canoodling in the morning.
Post-coitus.
For no reason. I'm not saying, like, ew, old people, gross. What I'm saying is that they literally are just lying there, like, two people randomly for no reason in a hotel room. And, like, they're just rehashing the same conversation that they've had in every previous scene. But then they end it by basically, like, going for round two. And being so gross about it, because literally they were both basically being like, oh, I can't believe all of our equipment still works after all these years. And I'm like, what, did you have to clear cobwebs out of it? Don't make me watch this. And but the one funny part in that was that at the end she goes, yeah, maybe this time you can take your shirt off. And I thought that was kind of funny.
Yeah, that was joke number two that I laughed at.
That was a good one. See, they did have a few. There was someone in the writing room who had taste.
I attribute that to the actors improving. I give writers credit. Yeah,
there was another scene.
Andrea Martin was wasted on this film. Okay, wasted.
Yes, I gotta say,
she's amazing.
Yes, which is why I've chosen to honor her with my outfit today. Can we talk about just really briefly? Really liked the scene where. So after they got busted for meeting in the church, they were like, we have to meet somewhere else. So they decided to go to somewhere where they're sure that no one that they know will be. Where did they go? A warehouse at the edge of town? An obscure reference library? No. A Starbucks.
A Starbucks in the middle of Little Italy.
In Little Italy. Which is like a 6-block radius. I was laughing. I laughed. So they show up. Franca's in disguise, and Carlo has got a fedora on, which is also his version of a disguise, I suppose. So they're meeting incognito, and he's ordered them some drinks. And the barista comes over with their drinks and says, drinks for Carlo and Franco, and she shrieks. Because she was trying to be sneaky, and she goes, you told them our names, our real names? I was laughing very hard at that part. I thought that was very funny. Yeah. And then, like, later on, you see her. She has kind of, like blown him off. And then you see her later on in the same Starbucks. And she's got the barista from before. She's sitting at a little table. And she's got the barista from before bringing her a continuous supply of, like, caramel macchiatos or something.
Venti caramel lattes with whipped cream and caramel drizzle she has asked
Wait,
for.
They were venti?
They were all venti, bro.
Oh, shit. Because I did the math. There were 9 of them on the table in front of her.
Yeah.
Do you know off the top of your head how much that drink would be?
Oh, how many dollars right now in this economy?
Yeah. Or 3 years ago.
Around $7.
Okay, so let's say it's $7 drink. She's got 9 of them, plus tax.
Yeah.
Before tip, that is $64.15 worth of macchiato.
Yeah. Also,
is she rich?
She's just blowing it. She's just
drowning her sorrows in caramel. She's got so much sugar and coffee in her system at that point. She's sitting there kind of like, oh, whoa, is a me. But then literally you have so much caffeine and sugar in your system. You should be buzzing like a goddamn hummingbird at that point.
She was a little bit, which is very funny. But like when I saw that table of stuff and I can tell how small Andrea Martin is and like obviously Franca. Bro, if she had that many, she would explode.
Yeah.
She would have a real angina to deal with. On both sides. Left chest, right chest.
When double I saw angina.
That, I was like double homicide. Double angina.
Double fuck.
Like, yeah. I got so nervous for
we got her. A double homicide over here in the Starbucks. Maybe those cops who busted them for having weed in the pizza in that previous scene can come back and maybe escort her to hospital.
Oh my god. Also, that scene? Atrocious. Hated it.
That
weed pizza scene and then the rave that happens after. And then Leo getting felt up by that Canadian actress who did not deserve that. Upsetting.
That is another reason why I think that this movie was written in 2002. Because that scene where, okay, first of all, listeners, this is what happens roughly in the scene. They use weed instead of oregano on the pizza, and they say that ostensibly the result is that the people out in the pizzeria eating that tainted pizza have just, they've gone kind of like, it's like they're on some kind of stimulant, they're dancing on the tables, they're partying, like it's a little rave, okay? In 2002... Perhaps, maybe you could have convinced an audience that's what happens when you eat wood-fired weed on pizza. But in this day and age of legalized cannabis in Toronto, Canada, where this movie is set, we're not chumps.
No.
What are you feeding us this fakakta? What is this?
Yeah. Literally, you think putting marijuana leaves on a pizza, sprinkling it on a pizza, also, what fucking... He's just sprinkling oregano.
How are you
like that? Not even in the sauce.
You're gonna tell me. You are gonna tell me that a man whose entire life is dedicated to making pizza, he can't tell the difference between oregano and the devil's lettuce. I don't buy it.
I don't buy it at all.
I don't buy it.
And then, especially. Leo comes in and he's like, Dad, this isn't oregano. And then he puts the thing up to his nose and then the dad smells it and immediately goes, oh, bro, you didn't smell it the entire time you were sprinkling it the fuck on?
Mm-mm.
Also, that's not how you
His nose is clouded with rivalry and old bitterness. He can't smell it.
You're right. You can't just sprinkle weed leaves like a fucking garnish and then become high. What the fuck?
Let's get the Mythbusters in on this
if
scene.
If we started doing this for like every, like that's why I didn't want to get into so many
this
things.
This podcast could so be bad. 3 hours long because of what you just said. If we got into every single scene, this would be a full-time job, us tearing it apart. Miniseries. Yeah. We would have to have Miniseries. An offshoot of VomCom just called We Fucking Hate Little Italy.
That's literally what it's called. Also, the fact that they chose to keep that a police officer scene of her like basically feeling up in this post BLM world the way we feel about cops mm-hmm. now mm-hmm. we're supposed to look at that and laugh
and me too also
oh yeah
right post like
BLM it, and it, me too
what you're showing a person in a position of power sexually assaulting someone using their role as a cop which is just, there's so many check boxes. That's like checking off every single box on the list of things not to put in a family-friendly, lighthearted rom-com.
Yeah.
Place. Yeah. Place. What is this?
Place. Oh, my goodness. Also, why
the
is it that
chose
Emma...
violence.
They really did. Like, I understand that Emma Roberts moved away for 5 years to London. So her little Italy accent disappeared a little. Okay?
Of course. 5 years and it's gone, of course. We know this.
5 years. Out.
The it fact expires. That they, statute like, of limitations on an accent.
The fact that poor Hayden Christensen had to have his hair dyed a black hole color, be tanned like, what's his name? Mike the Situation. And then have to put on the accent and be charming in that accent. Like,
the most props I will give to anybody in this movie is Hayden Christensen, because I feel like he was dealt a very bad hand.
Yeah.
He had to push all charm through everything, every layer of bullshit they put on top of him. This poor man.
They kept also, on... Also, this role of his was a pizza, and each and every single thing they kept layering on top, more toppings. The mushrooms, the tan. The little, the bad hair was like little bell peppers, and he had to work through it all. There was a thick layer of cheese, which was his thick accent, and he had to push through, and his spirit had to come through on this role.
And what a feat. What else was I going to say? Also, I saw another comment because I was like looking to see how other people felt about this.
Yeah.
One comment was like, the fact that they tried to convince us that Hayden Christensen and Emma Roberts are the same age is insane. And I was like, he can't be that old. But also, he has
the wrinkles. Because the wrinkles on his forehead betrayed him.
He's been around for such a long time. Yeah, the wrinkles on his forehead, the tan didn't help the wrinkles. But I always forget because he doesn't look like he's 40. He's 40 now. He's 40 years old. 1981.
Oh, I would. Wow.
I know. So, like, he doesn't look like it, right? He doesn't look like it. But then you think about how long he's been around, and I'm like, wait, if he was like in his 20s in the 90s doing the second Star Wars trilogy, the prequels, how old is he now? So he's 40. And then Emma Roberts is born in 19. Looks great. All props to you, bro.
Mm-hmm.
Emma Roberts is 1990, and then we're supposed to believe that they're the same age?
Yeah. Eyebrow wrinkles said no.
No. Mm-mm. That's rude. So, like, age, accent, hair, tan. Poor Hayden Christensen.
They were trying to hide him. Man, let him let my boy Christian, Hayden Christensen, free. He's being hidden by the shackles of hair dye and tan. Yeah, or you could get an Italian-Canadian actor. I know, it's crazy. It's so crazy. But, like, listen to me. Listen to me. I know it sounds crazy. But what if? You got someone who was that thing to play that role.
Mm. Oh my God. Or just like, you don't have to try so hard.
I don't know why they shoehorned him into this role.
Mm-mm. I'm glad that he's Canadian, but there are lots of other Canadian actors who probably were available.
Yeah.
And like, I'm surprised he said yes.
Probably were in town and available.
Oh man, this movie is a lot. It really is just a lot.
It's a real loaded... cheese crust pizza.
Yeah. So another thing loaded.
This is a real Chicago style deep dish amount of movie.
Another thing I want to talk about, because it has to do with the outfit that I'm wearing. So I'm wearing Nikki's outfit from when her grandmother tells her the secret to her sauce. Which, listen, I'm not Italian, and I only started really cooking in 2017, 2018, okay? But I've made a fair share of my own pasta sauces, okay? In every single one, they say to put anchovies. Why the fucking big secret of Nonna Franca's pizza sauce is two anchovies stirred in? Bitch, I would hope there are two anchovies stirred in. Also, for that big fucking stock pot that is as big at like weighs as much as Emma Roberts, you only put two anchovies?
Addendum to my theory about who wrote this movie. Not only was it written in 2002 and written by someone who knows nothing about soccer, because you know what, they sat down one day and they were in writing class and their teacher said, write what you know, or if you don't know it, do a little bit of research, and they said no, and they wrote about soccer. That's what I got. And I also got that with the way that they talk about food in this movie. Because it's like, the only thing they ever talk about is fucking pizza. And kale? But you've got all these people who are ostensibly chefs and pizza makers for a living. Even when they have, when Leo and Nikki have their date, if you made pizzas for a living and you had one night off where you want to cook something really special for this girl that you really like, who also makes pizza for a living? Would you maybe not branch out and make something other than pizza? you know, yeah. show her the spice of life. You're trying to convince her that Little Italy is like this cool, fun place that she's missing. Maybe make something other than pizza.
Yeah.
Do you also, do the writers know what food is? Do they know that pasta exists for Italians also? Put anchovies in the sauce. Yeah, duh. Come on, what is this? Have you heard of kale?
Yeah, it's a superfood.
Who wrote this?
I know. He was like, I was cringing. That like morning after, I think was to me the clunkiest because it was supposed to be like sexy. He sees her like in his shirt, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
It was atrocious. I hated it.
I thought it was very funny that the family only basically existed to support the main storyline. To the point, yeah. every character did.
Every character.
Every character was so invested in them getting together. Okay. Ugh. To the point where they go with Leo to the airport to stop her from getting on the plane.
Mm.
And there's the one part where he like yells her name and she turns around in the TSA line and he's standing on the stairs. They're all there, of course, in the background. But I just thought it was so, like, all I could think was, finally, Hayden Christensen has the high ground. That's all I could think of. And John, if you're listening to this, that joke goes out to you. But that was one of the things that I thought was funny.
Mm-hmm.
But I also thought that there was like one thing that I really liked about this movie and one thing that I really didn't like above all else. The one thing that I didn't like was the fact that she has moved away from Little Italy and she is sowing her oats and she's only coming back out of necessity. She doesn't really want to be there. She goes back, sees that everything is exactly the same. All the people are the same and they're fine with it. That is depressing to me. For her to go back and see, this is why I left. This is exactly why I left, because nothing ever changes. And I want growth. And I have grown. It almost feels like they're pulling her back. There's so many times where Leo's character is holding Nikki's character hostage to the person that she used to be.
Yeah.
And his entire motivation is to show her what she's missing and that she should come back into what's familiar. And I think the movie should have ended with her leaving. It wouldn't have ever, and in this universe, it never would have. But how amazing would it have been if she, in fact, inspired him to leave his comfort zone?
Yeah.
Instead of him dragging her tooth and nail back to the gates of Little Italy.
Yeah, because he also did say that it was an option. He's like, if you guys don't make up, I'm getting on the plane with her. Fucking go, bro.
That was an option the whole time?
It was an option the whole time. She's in culinary school. She's going to just give up everything?
Also, you have the same passion as her. Maybe go collab? The fuck?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, I know. I understand potential. What you're saying.
I hate wasted potential. So that is one thing that I did not like above all else. Like the rest of it, a lot of stuff in there, I'm like, I didn't like it, but I can forgive it because it's this goddamn genre. But the one thing that I really loved, the one thing that I really loved was the challenge trope, which they set up so beautifully and then didn't really used to its full potential. I love the trope of them at the beginning. You see Nikki and her rival in culinary school. The chef Corrine sets them up to be in competition with each other. You guys each have 2 weeks to give me a menu and then come back to me, and whichever menu I like more, you are gonna be my, like, was it the assistant, was it like some kind of sous chef or like the like some kind of top tier level chef at this restaurant, this new restaurant that she's setting up in Mayfair. And then you don't see that trope come to completion. It's set up so beautifully.
Yeah.
It didn't, I feel like that would have been such a good, that would have been such a good instigating factor to get her back out of Little Italy. And he could have gone with her if you wanted to have the happy ending where the guy gets the girl. Send them both there. She goes, I will only take this job if he can work with me too, or something like dramatic like that. And Chef Corrine goes, This is not a package deal, blah, 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 whatever. And she goes, try this. And gives him some food that he's made. And she goes, oh my God, is that fig and Gouda?
Exactly.
And then they work together as the new chefs at this new restaurant. And I was like, see, wouldn't that have been a dope ending?
Yep.
But instead, what we see is that it's kind of I feel like the setup kind of falls flat on its face, because not only does she not spend hardly any time making that menu while she's back in Canada, but then the other guy ends up getting the job. Her competitor at Culinary School ends up getting the job. And then in the end, we find out that the restaurant ends up closing because of some bad reviews. So it didn't really, like, we could have found a reason for this entire movie without that storyline.
Yeah.
It was wasted screen time.
It was.
And it was especially disappointing, because I would have loved for that to be the basis of the story.
Yeah, because why else, except for the fact that this is her childhood crush, does she stay with him? Because...
Exactly.
Like, this goes back to just the bad writing and the half set and, like, doing everything half-assed, where you're just like, oh, she's competitive and blah, 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 and she's strong-willed and she actually got out there. But then she comes back and she's like, ooh, ooh, I'm the girl next door. This guy I've been in love with, but he doesn't feel the same or whatever. And I ran away to London to follow my dreams, but now I'm back and I'm very flirted with him and I want to kiss him, but then I can't stay, because if I don't go, then I'll stay, you know?
Like, and all, they ended up wasted. Making her be like, oh, woe is me. This guy that I've always been carrying a torch for doesn't like me back. But she, like, totally friend zoned herself.
She did. And what I mean by that is, when is he not reciprocating?
Yeah, literally at all times. And we find out that the reason that they never, like, brought their relationship further is because the last time they saw each other, she kissed him at a wedding or something and then fucking left.
Yeah, she got scared.
But she's been spitting this nonsense about how he's the one who rejected her the whole time. And he's like, why did you leave? We didn't get to.
Yeah.
He never. The things that she keeps saying about him, I'm like, that's just not true. So you are essentially making yourself into the victim of this scenario that you've completely created for yourself.
Yeah, there was not enough, like, they obviously set up a lot of stuff, but again, no follow through, because it gets mentioned that she did kiss him at Gina's wedding.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously they kissed and he was obviously into it, but there wasn't enough, like, reasoning. Like, we can guess that the reasoning why they didn't go, like, full force ahead was because of their families and the Romeo and Juliet whatever the fuck, but, like, that was never specifically cited to each other. It was only, like, Leo only mentioned it talking to Luigi, and he's like, oh, things are so complicated. It isn't really. You guys are just letting, I mean, it's not even miscommunication, it's just like they're not even saying the correct things to each other.
Yes, 100%. It felt like they were having two different storylines, parallel but not ever crossing paths. And for what? It was just,
yeah.
I was having a really hard time deciding what the trope of the week would be this week, because there were so many setups and absolutely zero follow through.
Yeah.
For so many tropes. The only one, the thing that I think this trope of the week should be for this movie is home is where the heart is. Because basically she decides that her home is with her love, right? Yeah. So that's really the only follow through that this movie had.
That's it. Is going back to Little Italy.
Yeah.
That's it.
Which, again, and I find that depressing, because... It's the whole Rory Gilmore phenomenon, where you have her set up as this character who's driven, confident, talented. She goes out on her own. She pursues her dreams. And then she backslides into the exact pattern that her character was not written to fulfill. Yeah. It doesn't make sense. Like, I understand you could write a character who says, I don't want to be like my parents. And then in the end, they end up like their parents, and it's kind of like it's a kind of a tragedy in that way. Or maybe they see that there are maybe they understand their parents more in the end, you know?
Yeah.
So that does exist. But I do not like it when you set up a character to be, okay, this character is forging their own path in life. Their mm-hmm. whole trajectory is going towards making a name for themselves, doing this thing that they are so passionate about. And then in the end, you see them back at square one, because it's not even like, well, what was that all for then? It's more about, well, why did you write badly?
Yeah.
Because you can write that character, but it's not the way you did it. You wrote them to achieve a certain goal, and then you did a U-turn in the writing. No, that seems like you do not have direction or intention set out for yourself.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like from a writing perspective. Yeah. And I find that frustrating, babe.
Yeah. I find that insulting.
Yeah.
Why do you get to write things when you do it half-ass?
Yep, exactly. And honestly, I've brought it up a few times in this particular episode. I have a chip in my shoulder about the Gilmore Girls reboot. But it's just, that's my main issue. My main issue was how they did Rory so dirty like that.
Yeah, that's rude.
If you're going to have a character with a plot twist, you cannot have the plot twist be completely out of the blue for the audiences. It's the same way with character development, in my opinion. If you're going to have a character do a certain action or make a decision, you have to set up that character's modus operandi so that the audience look at that and go, well, that makes sense. Or maybe even if I was in that situation, maybe that's the decision I would make.
Yeah.
Based on what I know, or based on what my experience of this character is. If you have a character making absolute batshit decisions and actions that don't line up with their characters, that's not the movies. That's just not the magic of the movies, you know, baby? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a reason that everything is on screen is only the stuff that needs to be there, because you are creating this perfect, succinct world.
Yeah.
Where if a character does something unexpected, there's got to be a reason behind it.
There's got to be a reason, because when there isn't, when you have that U-turn or you have that plot twist that doesn't make fucking sense to what you've been setting up, it takes your viewers out of it.
Yeah.
They just get mad.
Because it's like a psych out.
Yeah. Because, like, not every... Like, yeah, things should be surprising and things should feel fresh, but also, you don't want to just throw people off just for the sake of throwing them off, because like, oh, look, it's unexpected. No. Sometimes when your viewers are following along, it's supposed to be that. To make something so confusing and just roundabout and not fucking make sense to any of the work that you had just put in is doing yourself a disservice, your characters a disservice, and your audience who have been on the ride with you since the beginning, and then you just fucking slap them in their face.
That's how you lose friends, okay?
Yeah. Ugh. Big feelings about this
movie. Yeah, big, big feelings. I'm curious to know, what would your rating of this movie be? And you tell me yours, I'll tell you mine, and then I'll tell you what the Rotten Tomatoes score is.
Oh, Lord. I think that my rating for this movie will be 4 fig pizzas out of 10.
Okay, I like that. Good rating scale. I would give this movie 1 gabagool out of 10. And I'm being gracious and giving it that one because there are some actors that I like in it.
Yeah, that's really the only thing, is that, like, I don't dislike Emma Roberts and Hayden Christensen together. I think the actors tried? Period. I was going to say tried their best, but, like, that's not true. I think just tried.
You didn't want to lie to the audience?
No, I didn't want to lie to the audience or myself, because I respect you guys. I think they tried, period, with what they were given, period.
Yeah. Kat and I respect our audience, unlike the writers of Little Italy.
Yeah. What is the Rotten Tomatoes?
Do you want to guess? I tell you.
Is it 2 out of 10? Is it 10? Is the scale 10? Or is it out of 5 tomatoes?
It is. Wait, let me.
How many tomatoes?
I don't know the answer to this.
How many jars of Nona Franca sauce? How many anchovies in a big stock pot?
Okay, so it's a percentage. It's out of 100.
Oh, yeah. Okay. 42%.
Generous.
26%.
It is 13%. Positive reviews on Rotten Tomatoes. And yeah.
Should we read one? Is there like a very funny one?
Ooh, the reviews are very funny because they kind of like the reviewers leaned in to the food metaphors a lot, which is like one of, it was one of the themes in the movie that like every single time you see them cooking, they somehow make it a metaphor about love.
Yeah.
So let's see. Okay.
I think my favorite one of those is when if you have to squeeze love out of a man's heart, then you don't want it. I agree with that. That's the only one I agree with. That's
it. As she's like squeezing tomatoes. So funny.
Yeah.
And then the other little Leo is like grating cheese or something. Yeah. Oh, no, he's kneading the dough.
And the grandpa's like, I knew he was going to say that. Okay, sorry. Go on.
Yeah. You saw this coming from a mile away. And the grandpa goes, you got to treat the dough like a beautiful woman. You got to be gentle, blah, blah, blah. So disgusting. Do you want to hear some of the reviews?
Yes.
Okay. Sarah Michelle Fetters says, I find it difficult to find this slice of cheesy romance. Wait, whoa. This is a crazy sentence. I'm going to edit this for her. I think what she meant to say was, I find this slice of cheesy romance to be entirely inedible.
That's the edited version?
Yeah, that's the edited version.
Okay.
There was a triple negative in there. I don't know what's going on.
Oh.
Okay, good-hearted enough. Richard Krause says it's good-hearted enough, but feels like it arrived via a marinara sauce splattered time capsule from 1985. Andrew Galdi said, this is a Hallmark movie that somehow got a theatrical release.
Amazing.
Yeah. There was one. I want to find my favorite one. This movie reheats lazy stereotypes while combining narrative ingredients that are more stale than fresh.
Oh my god.
Ay, Marone. That's so funny. There's so many jokes about it being cheesy.
Mm.
And someone said something to the tune of like, oh, you know how with pizza, even when it's bad, it's kind of good? Well, this movie isn't like that. And I co-sign on that.
I co-sign on that as well. That took a lot out of me. I realized, there was no moment of pausing. We just, like, and this thing, and this thing, and another thing.
We went in. This was our, what do you call it? A filibuster? Where you just stand up and talk, and you don't stop talking.
Oh, my that God. If I had to do a filibuster, I would talk about this movie.
Oh, my God. That's such a good question to ask people as, like, an icebreaker.
Yeah, I'm like, start what's using one that thing you can talk about forever.
Yeah, I love that. So it would be this for you.
It would be this, and I think it would also be like on a good note. It would be Pride and Prejudice.
Mm-hmm. So but movies,
movies,
yeah,
movies. The movies. The films, the cinema.
Hey, I'm watching here.
That was very good. Sorry. No, that was very good. I loved it.
Kat, where can our listeners find you on social media?
They can find me at It's Catherine Ram on any of the social medias. Molly, where can they find you?
You guys can find me on Instagram at molly.mca or TikTok at mollythewitch. And you can also find VomCom at VomCom Podcast on TikTok and Instagram. So definitely go give us a listen, give us a like, leave us some little comments. Also, if you watch the movies, we'd be curious to hear what your opinions are because we're just two gals sitting in two separate rooms filibustering at each other. So, you know, let us know what you think.
Filibustering into the void. Into the void that is Hayden Christensen's hair.
That is the perfect joke to end this episode. You are a genius. Absolute just cosmos brain moment.
Thank you. I love you.
Love you too.
I can't wait for the next movie.
Yeah. Oh, what's it gonna be? Who knows? Well, we know, but you don't know yet. As a listener. Anyways, okay, love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. And thanks for listening.
I am fond of you, you know.
And a girl.
I don't wish you weren't such a stinker.
Hey, I'm watching here.